Silly Beagle Productions presents Physics in Action, a podcast which shows physics in our everyday world, reaching beyond the scope of the standard textbook.
Each episode brings you applications and analysis of physics in such diverse settings as sports, movies, video games, and television.
We also take a look into the frontiers of physics exploration.
And don't forget interviews with exciting personalities on the leading edge of physics, innovation, and application.
So join us for our trip into the fantastic world of physics. And don't forget, you can always check out our website at physicsinaction.com.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for another episode of the Physics in Action podcast. I'm David.
And I'm Julia. Today we have Jake, Dustin, and Justin with a discussion about physics in the Olympic sport of curling.
Then Ryan gives us a premiere on science and engineering of carbon nanotubes.
But first, let's take a moment to read some listener feedback.
An anonymous listener left us a comment about episode 10 featuring Dana's interview, Jennifer Ouellette, author of Physics of the Buffyverse. The listener wrote, "I thought this was a really interesting interview. Great job, guys."
Also, Master Magician wrote on our iTunes page, "If you like this and you're taking physics, you'll love this podcast. Look up Physics in Action. It is, in fact, the bee's knees, you dig?"
Thanks for the great feedback. Now let's dive into today's discussion around the physics of curling.
Hello and welcome to Physics in Action at the Winter Olympics. I'm Jake.
I'm Dustin.
I'm Justin.
And we're here to bring you the physics of curling. Now, curling is widely believed to be one of the oldest team sports in the world.
It was created in Scotland as early as 1511, where it was played recreationally on Scotland's ice ponds in the winter.
And for those of you who don't know what curling is, it's the game that you see commonly in the Winter Olympics where you hurl or you gently glide a large stone block or stone along a thin sheet of ice, and you try to sweep in front of it so that it goes inside of a ring and you can score the most points.
It's similar to a shuffleboard, but, you know, it's like shuffleboard on ice.
Exactly.
Now, this year in the Winter Olympics, Canada, of course, won the men's gold, and their skip was a man named Kevin Martin, nicknamed Kmart. And Canada is one of the most dominating curling teams ever. They've won, like, at least 8 medals, I think more, actually.
8 medals in the Olympics.
8 medals in the Olympics so far. And they've placed in every Olympic competition, men's and women's, since curling entered the Olympics. That's just amazing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, as far as curling applies to physics, there are many such ways. One of the most prominent ways it does so is through the use of friction in curling. Friction's the main part of curling because you're trying to reduce the friction initially in as many ways as possible, and then you're trying to reduce it even further by sweeping in front so that you can try to guide the block to where it has to be.
The reason you have to control friction is so that the block will stop in the correct spot on the ice. Sweeping in front of the block makes the ice melt a little bit, which reduces the friction and causes the stone to go farther.
A curling ice is different from ice on hockey and figure skating, because normally, I mean, you've probably seen it before, when a Zamboni drives around, the ice is flat and smooth. But curling ice is pebbled, which means that they sprinkle droplets of water over the flat ice so that there's like actual
little
pebbles.
Beads of ice.
Exactly, little water droplets just
floating on top of the ice.
And because of these water droplets, there's less friction because the stone isn't riding on a flat. Yeah, right. Because otherwise, like Dustin was saying, there would be a vacuum under the stone. And you'd think that would be a good thing, but the suction would actually be pulling it to the ice and raising the friction.
Exactly. Now, a fun trivia fact is that when you spin a cup on just a table or whatever have you, when you spin it clockwise, it banks to the left. But when you spin a curling block on a sheet of ice, when you spin it clockwise, it banks to the right. Now, this is because the friction in the front of the block, or in the front of the cup, is greater than that in the back. But for the curling block, the friction in the front of the curling block is lesser than that in the back of the curling block, and that so the back of the curling block holds onto the ice more and causes it to rotate and bank.
Oh, incidentally, these blocks that we're using weigh 20 kilograms, which is approximately 40 pounds. So these aren't exactly pebbles that you're throwing down the ice.
No, they're pretty heavy as far as I hear.
Yeah, and to give you an idea of how heavy these are, we decided what better way than to make you do a physics problem. Now, now consider that the length of the curling rink?
Yeah.
Rink.
Ice.
Curling ice, I'm sorry.
Sorry, sheet.
The curling sheet is the name of the, like, the...
Playing area.
The playing area. Thank you. The curling sheet is about 45 meters long, and your average curling stone weighs 20 kilograms. Now, if you want to push that curling stone all the way to the other side of the curling sheet...
And have it stop exactly there.
Say you want it to travel exactly 45 meters... There is a very simple way to determine how far it's going to go. And of course, when I say simple, I don't mean really, really simple.
But simple enough that, you know.
Yeah, we can probably word it out to you. Now, the coefficient of friction between ice and the granite from the curling stone, is about 0.02. Now, that's rather
small.
Yeah. So to find the force of friction on this the curling stone, we'll multiply the force normal up, which is 20 times gravity, which is, we'll assume, 10. So we multiply 200 times 0.02, and the force of friction on the block is approximately 4 newtons backwards. Which is
fairly sizable. I mean, you know, as far as newtons go.
Right, but considering that the weight...
Considering that you're hurling a 20-kilogram block...
Which is the equivalent of 200 newtons. That's not very very much at all. So work equals force times distance. So if we want to find the total work done on the block... by the ice to slow it down and stop it at 45 meters, what we're going to do is take 4 newtons and multiply it by the 45 meters traveled. So 4 times 45 is 180 joules of work done to stop that curling stone in its tracks in the center of the house, which is the name of the target, by the way. So
because of the work energy theorem, that 180 joules of work is exactly the kinetic energy you'd need to throw the stone initially with. So the kinetic energy equals 1/2 times the mass times the velocity squared. So throwing a 20 kilogram block, you'd get 180 equals 1/2 times 20 kilograms times the velocity squared, which means the velocity squared is 18 meters squared per second squared.
So when we take the square root of 18, we get about 4.24 meters per second.
Which is how fast you need to throw the stone to get it to the other end of the ice.
And to stop right in the middle where you need it.
So now if everyone could just do that, there'd be no more curling because everyone would be perfect at it, right?
Right, but since they can't, I mean, the stones end up everywhere, all over the house.
Now, that's where the brooms come in.
Right, and that's where another thing, the momentum of the stone is used to knock the other stones out of the way because the objective is to be as close as you can to the center. Now, if another team's curling stone is in your way, you have no choice but to send your curling stone straight into that other stone.
How?
Yeah.
And hopefully send the other curling stone flying out of the scoring area.
Unfortunately, they don't do much flying. It's more like click.
Yeah. It's pretty elastic collision.
It's gliding.
True.
Yeah, well, it kind
mostly
of varies.
Momentum is conserved.
Yeah. Momentum's always conserved.
Well, this is...
Most of the energy is conserved.
Yeah, thank you, Justin. That's what I meant. So, thank you for listening. One more brief fact about curling we'd like to call your attention to is that this year, at the 2010 Vancouver Olympics, the Norwegian curling team arrived with an interesting choice of outfit. Justin, would you care to tell us a little bit more?
Well, normally, according to the Canadian Curling Federation's rules, all curlers have to wear black pants while on the ice. However, at the Olympics, they don't enforce this rule.
Imagine that.
So the Norwegian team decided to show up in their team colors, which involved checkered argyle pants.
Which I'm sure you can find a picture of on the internet.
And it's quite the fashion statement.
Exactly. I mean, they're skin-tight pants, much like everything else in the Olympics.
Well, they're not the golf pants.
Well, you know what? They look pretty skin tight on the ice. And it's quite an interesting fashion statement. Now, we know we're not fashion in action, but we just like to observe sort of things like that. If you have any more questions, you could email us at physicsinactionpodcast@gmail.com.
Or you can visit our website, www.physicsinaction.com.
Or you could just check us out on iTunes, which is probably where you got this listening to us talking. Well, yeah, I suppose it's not a fact, but a probability.
So
thanks
for
listening.
So we'll play you off with just some smooth jazz.
Yeah.
Do 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 do
do do do do do do do
do do. Thanks for listening. Hi, this is Jennifer Ouellette, author of The Physics of the Buffyverse, and you're listening to Physics in Action.
Next, let's hear what Ryan has to say about carbon nanotubes.
This is Ryan with the Physics in Action podcast, and today's topic is carbon nanotubes. Carbon nanotubes have been one of the major research topics in the past decade, and they continue to be one of the frontiers of physics. Their properties have led to excitement and the potential capabilities in both mechanics and electricity. They're very small, hollow tubes having walls sometimes as thick as 1 nanometer thick, which is actually just 1/1,000,000th of a meter. They'll most likely be used in the future for a lot of applications, including very small electronic systems that depend on them for their electronic properties, and possibly the space elevator development that depends on carbon nanotubes for their incredible strength. Depending on the length, diameter, or twists of the tubes, they all have different structural and physical properties that make them really exciting. Some have been known to have 100 times the strength of steel, while only 2 millimeters long. They also have one of the largest length to diameter ratio of any material we know of, which makes them very unique. These special properties that researchers have found have excited them ever since the discovery of carbon nanotubes, and there's a lot of ongoing research in this relatively new area of physics. However, many of the applications may never be able to be used commercially because of their potential to be very toxic and harmful to human health. This would be really unfortunate considering the developments that are depending on the success of these nanotubes in areas such as medicine, energy efficiency, and electronics. There's a lot of research that still needs to be done in determining if they truly are dangerous, and if so, finding a way to battle this so we can use them to move technology and science forward.
Thanks, Ryan.
That's it for today's episode, but we're already at work on our next segment.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have thoughts, ideas, or would like to contribute a segment, you can email us at physicsinactionpodcast@gmail.com.
Or you can leave us a comment on our webpage at www.physicsinaction.com or leave listener feedback on your iTunes page.
Thanks for listening, and special thanks to Jeff Myers and For Me to See for our intro music, Tech. Music is provided courtesy of Mevo's Music Alley. Check it out at music.mevo.com.